Hello, and welcome to episode 61 of Gamer Heroes Podcast with GGKC. We are your new hosts. If you joined us last week on episode 60, you'll know that Derek and John have now departed the show, and we have taken over, the four of us. My name is John, different from the old John, and I have a hot take for you this week. It's that some games should just not be made.
This is Mike.
This is Josh Welch. I was not on the last episode. Really excited to be here and take over this opportunity. Looking forward to talk some great games with everyone.
I am Thomas Egan, and I think it was you who said it last episode, but I'm not in here with you guys. You guys are in here with me.
Yeah, which I said, and I did not realize that was a Watchmen reference.
Oh, really?
So that lowers my nerd cred, like,
already.
10
great
steps,
start, John.
That's
right.
Me.
Yeah. Bring back the old John.
Okay, I'll call him.
Hashtag not my John.
Yeah, so on last episode, John and I, this is Mike, we're on that transition episode. You guys did not meet Thomas and Josh, but they are our other half with GGKC, so you'll hear them on this podcast a lot as well.
And the crew for this podcast will be rotating somewhat, so you'll get the pleasure of some of us some weeks, and some weeks it'll be a fraction. Or a different portion of us. But we're very much looking forward to continuing to put out an excellent podcast for you all.
Not me.
Okay, Thomas is just here to party.
Got that right. Well, what do we got going on? We got, you said some games shouldn't be made.
Yeah, I...
Please explain, John.
So, if you listened last week also, I took a little bit of a turn of kind of crapping all over... what was it called? Graveyard.
The Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
But morbid.
Yeah. And that game I felt like at least had some good ideas, but I didn't like some of their execution. I downloaded another game on Game Pass. Or I'm sorry, this one was on Xbox or Gold, the free Gold games. This one's called Prison Architect. And this one's been around for a while. Kind of a known quantity. I'd seen pictures of it and some of the hilarity, I guess, that's in the game. On Reddit and whatnot. And so I thought, you know, I like a good sim game. I figured it would just be Sim Prison. And so I downloaded it. Really pretty basic game. And you kind of have two options. You can play the campaign, which also is your tutorial. Or you can just kind of load up sandbox mode. So I launched the campaign. And the very first mission has you join a prison that's already mostly built out. And your responsibility and how they teach you to build things is that you need to build an execution chamber to enact capital punishment on a murderer.
Man, really dropping in hot there.
Yeah, so it's like, and it just, you know, from the outset, I was like, man, I'm uncomfortable. And they've got like a priest in the cell with this guy trying to absolve him.
Oh,
and you got
God.
Like the CEO of the prison calling you every 10 seconds like, hey, this isn't your fault. You're just here to do your job.
Do they have the phone ringing just in case you don't get killed?
I guess. I mean, it's just
waiting for that phone call.
Check up on you. So, you know, so that was very morbid. And they did everything short of making you pull the trigger on this electric chair. Like, you had to build the power lines. You had to test the chair by throwing the switch. I was like, man, this is really weird.
Only the chair, though, not lethal injection.
No,
hanging.
Just, I don't know. Maybe there are other options.
You got to earn the hanging. I don't know.
Another problem with the game is because the story is also the tutorial, it very much gates you into what you have to build the steps for that tutorial, right? There's no going outside of it. And as soon as you build something, it takes forever for that action to actually happen. So you can't do anything else once you start building that step. So every time you go to the next step in the tutorial, you're waiting 60 seconds for the next thing to load up.
Like actual 60?
Yeah. Like sitting there waiting for workers to walk across the map and build the thing that you just put down. And you can't do anything else.
You can't speed it up?
No, maybe there is a way to do that. I did not investigate that much. Probably should have. But you can't like go
well,
build
probably
something
that's
something
else. Should have introduced.
Probably. They definitely didn't guide me towards it. So there's that problem, and I don't know if there's other ways to capitally punish my prisoners, because all they gave me an option for was the electric chair. So, beyond the morbidity, if you will, It also just, I think, was very slow in how it starts and not really something I wanted to invest
in. Well, I mean, you probably have a lot of time in prison, so.
Well, okay. So is this some kind of, like, is this some kind of art where the game is speaking to me like the game is my prison?
Do you get a background file on each of the prisoners, like what they did?
So I think I've seen screenshots like of the game where you can pull up history behind each prisoner and see what they did. They also did like walk through why, you know, why he has the death penalty. He like premeditated the killing of his wife and her lover. And like they walk you through this whole cutscene where he does it. And there's like these awkward naked bodies in bed. And they're like barely covering up their genitals and whatnot. It's just, the whole thing is just like made me want to crawl out of my skin.
Man, who created this
game? I feel like I do not have a good read on this game. Like,
well, it may be very fun.
It may be.
But I don't know if I want to find out.
Fair.
So that's my take. I'm not sure. Well, it might be a little strong to say some games shouldn't be made, but it certainly wasn't made for me.
Did Creed do all the music?
My own prison.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well, anyway, Mike's off the podcast from now on.
Put him in there on a Sunday morning. Shaking my heel. Sorry, we listened to a lot of Creed growing up, so I apologize. All right, yeah, so that's what I've been playing. What have you guys been playing?
I've been living that Fallout 4 life. No Man's Sky, I'm playing a bunch still. And then just a couple days ago, just yesterday actually, I booted up Horizon Zero Dawn for the first time at my girlfriend's place. She owns it, so I can really only play it at her place, which is fine because then I'll like drip feed it, which is kind of how I like to play those games.
That's smart to make her get all the expensive games for you.
You know, it's very fun. This is the first time that she's ever bought a really big
title.
A really big title and played it first, like before me. Because usually I'm recommending stuff to her that I've already played or I know all about or something. But I watched her play. I mean, she was over 60 hours of it.
Past
weekend. Yeah,
that's a lot of gaming.
I thought she was like maybe coming up on 30,
strong
and I saw the
female
number.
Female lead characters brings in more female gamers.
Well, anyone can love that game. And
I haven't played her great things.
Dude, that game is amazing. I actually saw the big revelation in that game. Wow.
Did it ruin it for you?
Oh, no, because I've been enjoying watching her play this whole time. So, I mean, I haven't gotten everything in between, but boy, there's a lot of game there to enjoy. So she's been playing on easy, and man, she's gotten way better since she started. Like, she doesn't play shooters and stuff, not really, and she's gotten so much better at all, reacting to everything, aiming, like, just knowing
gaming
what your
skills.
Arsenal is. Yeah, and so that's been fun to watch.
So, for our listeners, and definitely not for me, because I definitely know this, give us a 30-second recap of what the game is about.
You are a redheaded young woman. You're in maybe the future apocalypse. It's like post-apocalypse. You're fighting robot dinosaurs, and the game is absolutely gorgeous. The world is tribalistic. You know, you've got a bow and arrow, and there's all this tech around, but everyone is advanced as cavemen, you know.
But there's like this corruption that's like spreading across the land that's like corrupting these robots.
Is that the Horizon, or
is it like a virus since they're robotic?
I don't know. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've played.
Well, because I just watched this stuff, I can tell you exactly what that is, but I'm absolutely not going to.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoilers. That game is wonderful, and I cannot wait to put more time into it. I started it on the hardest difficulty that I could get, because I just wanted, you know, I'm probably only going to play through it once.
Yeah, it's a single player only, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I assume I can bump down the difficulty later if it's too much for me, but, you know, the game starts, and the intro's pretty good, I think. Well, it's all right, but the way they teach you the combat is good. And so the whole thing is like you're being taught to hunt by your father figure, and he says, man, even these weak machines can kill a reckless hunter, like if she's not paying attention. And, you know, when I watch my girlfriend play it, she's playing for the story, not the difficulty. So, like, she can take 8 hits before she's in trouble. Mm-hmm. But, boy, oh, man, I was fighting these. They're basically deer, you know, or like bucks.
Yeah.
That I'm trying to take down. And, wow, turns out when they buck and they like kick you in the head, it hurts. It hurts a lot. Or I got almost one-shotted by one that was straight up charging at me and I just dodged the wrong way. But I liked it because it really made me feel like I was surviving.
It's all open world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I remember something that I liked about the game was that you have a whole bunch of different weapons that you can use. And I feel like the problem with those kind of games is that I sink into this one weapon set that I get real comfortable with, and that's all I want to use ever. But they have these hunter challenges throughout the game where you have like a time limit and you need to use particular weapons to like complete the challenge. So it really kind of forces you to get used to everything if you want to complete the whole thing.
Does the storyline force you to use your other weapons as well? Maybe like certain boss fights you need to use X weapon to aim your stun or
I don't really
progress.
Remember the storyline forcing okay. you to do anything.
Okay. These are just optional.
Yeah, just like optional side stuff.
So if you had to pick another, and maybe it doesn't exist, but another single-player experience, another game to compare it to in terms of sort of the mechanics, like, you know, what RPG elements it has, like skills or talents or inventory management,
you
all that.
You do some gathering that feels a little bit like Far Cry in the sense of, like, you're looking for herbs. You know, I was killing some boars at the beginning for meat that lets me do stuff. It's interesting that, you know, you find medicinal plants that give you, like, backup health that you can use to refill your actual health bar. But you can also craft potions using, like, the meat you get from boars. I assume this stuff's really going to open up because, really, I'm only, like, 45 minutes into the beginning of it. But if you want to fast travel to these campfires that are all over the huge world, you actually have to have a fast travel pack, which you craft using some stuff you make. And the stuff's not that hard to get, but I like the idea that you can't just jump around mm-hmm. willy-nilly, you know, without doing some work. Because I go back and forth on how I feel about fast travel in games. It's convenient. I love that a lot of people love it, but I like to hoof it. I told you I was playing Fallout 4,
mm-hmm.
and in survival mode, there's no fast travel.
No fast travel.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
No fast travel.
Could not play that game.
No fast travel, and you can only save when you sleep. So when you've been playing for a while and you get killed, boy, it hurts. It hurts a lot.
I get it. I think in general, if the game can do it right to where it doesn't bore you to death, they shouldn't have fast travel because, you know, the developers spend all this time making awesome environments and stuff, and then you just end up skipping all of it. You only see it once.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some of it out of, you know, some of the enjoyment out of it.
Well, I can tell you from watching Lizzie play that you certainly revisit places all over the map where, you know, when she was at the beginning of the game, I'd see her go somewhere and then dozens of hours later, she would go back and she could unlock something, you know, mm-hmm. Where they did a good job of gating stuff off, not just physically where it's like, oh, clearly I don't have this weapon. Like in the very intro, you are a kid, you're like 6 year old and you fall into these ruins and you don't have a weapon or anything. You're supposed to just walk through and, you know, it teaches you how to explore. But clearly there are doorways that are blocked in a way where it's like, oh, obviously later I'm going to be able to knock those over and get around them, you know? So they do that, but then in the story, I know that there are places you can't go because the tribes are like, oh, no, you don't. You're absolutely not allowed to go here. And then the story happens, and you can come back later and see all this stuff that you couldn't see before. But they do a good job of having you really explore this world. I mean, you really dig into it. You know, you don't just go to a place and then never see it again. So I think that does a really good job of making an expansive open world. It feels lived in. There are people all over the place. There are animals everywhere. When you find a bonfire to save, if you feel like you achieve something, it always feels good to.
Sort of just the way you're talking about it sounds like
Breath of the Wild. That's exactly what I had in my head.
Those came out very close to the same time. Mm. I think they were a couple months from each other.
You know, I've been saying to myself, you know, I don't own a PS4. I've been saying to myself, how am I going to play The Last of Us 2? And then I've been missing some other stuff like this, that Detroit game that I think got some big press when it first came out. Some of these exclusives on PS4 are really killing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited for Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
That was one of those games where, when I was playing through The Last of Us for the first time, Kelly would watch me play it, and she would tell me, like, I'm not allowed to play it again if she wasn't around.
Liz and I did the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first game we ever explored. It was the first game we ever played, like, strictly together like that, where only I played, but only when she was there to watch.
Yeah, it was crazy, too, because she never really wanted to play. It's just that they did such a good job of turning that game into, like, a movie that she just wanted to sit there and watch it.
It was very cinematic, but not in a way that took you out of the game too much.
Yeah.
And also, even the gameplay itself, like, it did a good job of just sort of keeping you in the story. While you were still interacting with it.
Well, it's so tense. I mean, any moment you're playing can turn tense in a second. Mm-hmm. So you never really relax. So when a cutscene comes on, at least you can kind of relax. But the content of the cutscene is not relaxing either. No. You know, that's not a game you unwind with.
That game was very stressful.
Sure. It is very stressful.
It is interesting how that this experience, you know, your significant other says, you know, you wait for me, is something that, I don't know, I feel like it's probably pretty new to gaming. You know, we've had this conversation about whatever the latest Netflix series is, right? You know, no skipping ahead episodes. Maybe it was, you know.
That lasts two episodes. That has never worked.
I have the day off and you're at work, so. Yeah.
I accidentally watched like 6 hours of it.
There was definitely nothing else I could have watched.
I keep telling Kelly she can't watch The Expanse. Because I want to read the book before I see too many of the episodes, and then like anytime I'm not reading, it's like, you gonna fucking read that book?
Yeah. Yep. Books, come on. the books are great. The books are better than the series for The Expanse, but I did enjoy the TV show.
I was surprised. I mean, the first season was still on Sci-Fi, right?
First two. And then I can't remember whether they did the third or not, and then they canceled the show, and Amazon has picked
it up. Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I remember not having high expectations for it, just because it was sci-fi. I know there's a lot of people that like sci-fi series, but everyone I've tried, it's like they're just hindered too much in their production ability. But The Expanse, it was like they went all in on it, felt like. I'm surprised they got rid of it.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a symptom of what that channel has gone through in the past, where the reality TV shows bring in higher viewership numbers than their, you know, real content. And so the executives look at that and they say, well, it's got to go. But, I mean, that's, I think, kind of short-sighted if you look at how this really strong original content is selling other networks. It's what's getting people to Netflix now. It's not their movies that they, you know, their movie library, really. It's their original content. And Hulu's going to be going the same way, Amazon. So for them to dump an original, you know, IP, or it's not their IP, but their show, in favor of, who knows what, Sharknado 10?
No, Sharknado 5 is the last one. That's why it's called Sharknado 5, the last one.
All right.
I mean, but speaking of Netflix and original content, they're teaming up with Blizzard and going to do a Diablo series. How about that?
That's okay, awesome. I am still nervous about that. I keep only seeing people refer to the same one article that says it's a rumor. Mm. I keep looking out for someone else.
Rumors.
Know, but it's comicbook.com, and I've seen them post reliable stuff before, but they're the only one who's posted anything about it, so I'm still nervous.
I feel like rumors like this that come out of Blizzard end up being true more often than not.
And I think you'd have to treat it like the Castlevania has to be animated, right?
Well, I would hope so.
You hope so. You're just pigeonholed to what you can do with sci-fi and the computer animations if it's live action. I would rather it be
animated.
I don't
know, man. If it's an original one, you know they're going to have a budget. I mean, I could see them doing a Game of Thrones kind of thing. They did CGI in there in a way that doesn't seem corny.
I just don't want to see live action World of Warcraft ever again.
I still got to see that movie. I might watch that this week.
It wasn't bad.
You mean other than my LARPing?
It wasn't the best.
Well, for sure. So Steve, is it Seville? The guy who played Superman in Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm. Henry Cavill.
Say it one more time.
Henry Cavill.
I wasn't even close.
What did you say?
Not the right thing.
Steve. Just Steve.
Henry Cavill. Yeah. Man Steve of Martin, dreams. Right?
He is confirmed as Geralt in the upcoming Witcher miniseries on Netflix. So that's exciting.
Geralt?
Sure. I've played the game and I still don't even remember.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Geralt, but...
Man, yeah, I've played the game, and I'm sure they've said the name a thousand times.
I haven't played the game,
I'm confident it's
I'm
not
I'm glad Geralt. I'm not going to be wrong in this answer.
I'm just going to refrain from saying it. Yeah. So, that guy from Witcher 3.
I'm going to... even if I'm wrong, I'm going to say it's Geralt.
Okay.
I'm excited for that. The Witcher series is wildly successful in... where is it? Is it Poland it comes from? I'm not confident about that. I probably am wrong about that. But it's wildly successful in the country that it came from in Europe. And obviously the video game series has done very well for itself. That was a game I actually liked to watch more than I liked to play. The combat was super clunky, but the story was great.
Oh, yeah.
I love the
story. Right before 3 came out, I was like, oh, I'm going to go play the original. They were like $2 on Steam.
Nope.
I bought it and completely just turned it off.
Oh, you...
I turned it off. The fighting mechanics was just awful. I can't believe it. I heard it's a great game series. I have yet to tackle it.
Yeah,
because the number one was so bad for me.
The mechanics and everything on the first game were pretty horrendous, but they totally changed all of that for Witcher 3.
It looks like it.
Witcher 3 is one of the greatest RPGs that I've played, I think.
Wow.
It is extremely fun. It feels like you're hunting the monsters.
And this is not a hot take, everyone. Remember that.
Like
this is a very popular opinion.
It's like you have so you can see like footprints and stuff on the ground, and you go into like your hunter vision, and you've got to, when you're doing quests, you've got to follow like where the footsteps lead you, and then
you build your bestiary, so you find out this thing only comes out at night. Also, it's weak against this oil, so I need to go gather herbs to get this oil. Like you really feel like you're preparing for a serious fight, and when you're hunting supernatural creatures, you know, I like that there's gravity to each fight. Like, you're not just walking into it like, oh, all right, this will be easy.
Yep. It's not a game where you pick up a ton of different potions, and every time you're in a battle, you're like, oh, man, I could use that potion, but I better save it for later so that I'll never use it for the rest of the game. This is the game where it's like, you have to use those potions. Like, get the potions that help you in combat because you need them to win. There's some, if you don't look at the weaknesses or look at like what it's strong at, it will destroy you.
And I think that makes Geralt an interesting character, because even though he's killing these, you know, insane mythical beasts, I mean, I've seen a griffin in there, you know, all sorts of golems and just tons of things. I've been surprised at the stuff that has shown up in that game. I like that he's not just Superman. But because the guy playing him is Superman. Let me explain my joke so you guys get it. I like that he's not just an invincible force. He's not just stronger than the world around him. He's just smart. He's crafty and clever. And the whole shtick of him being a Witcher is he hunts beasts. So, you know, he gets the potions. He does the research. He talks to people. You know, he sleuths around and stuff. He's not just a guy who is a titan. You know, he's not Kratos. He doesn't just walk around.
Not literally a god.
Right. I mean, humans will kill you. If you're not careful, even one strong human will get you, let alone, like, I remember at the beginning of the game, you start a bar fight. And that was the first time I really got messed up, was like, oh, I've been killing these like, wraiths and stuff. Easy peasy. Now I get to fight some humans. And boy, did I get my head shot off.
Oh, it's fun too, because you have two different swords. So you have like your silver sword that you have to use for monsters, and then you have your normal sword that you use for like humanoids. So it's on top of just learning the weaknesses and everything, you've also got to swap between your swords.
And it's a pretty sweet look having two swords on your back.
Yeah,
I guess my question with the announcement with Henry playing Geralt, Geralty. As someone who's never played the Witcher series, is he the right fit? I mean, that's a big question here. I've heard some, you know, combatant opinions online. I guess we'll never know until we see it, right?
Yeah, I have a hard time.
The only thing is, I don't know much about Henry besides Superman. What else has he done? And from Witcher, he seems like a outdoorsman, monster hunter, wielding two swords. Is that Henry's character?
Can I don't know anything about his acting chops.
Yeah.
I really did. He's a very good looking man. I really did
Hunk-o-meter
like
10.
Yeah.
Bing, bing, bing.
I really did like Man of Steel. I don't know if it was like the best movie, but I really enjoyed it. Definitely it's my favorite DC movie.
Oh man.
I know, but
you said John's trigger word.
Oh, geez.
Sound the alarms.
We'll save it for a different podcast.
Okay. You know, I don't want to knock it till I see it because I believe in Netflix. I believe in the IP of the Witcher series. I don't think they're just handing this off to just anybody. I mean, when I think it was President Obama went to, and now I absolutely have to look up what country the Witcher came from, but when he went to the country that with the Witcher's author was born in, that you know, it originated from, the gift to the president was the entire series of Witcher books.
Really?
And to them, that is a point of national pride.
Yeah.
You know, it's wildly successful. I mean, it was the equivalent of Harry Potter.
Is the studio based there, or did they just get the idea from this country?
Oh, yeah, the studio is based there.
Okay.
It's based off of a very successful series of books. I mean, it's serious stuff. So, I mean, they don't kid around with it. So I'll definitely give it a shot before I go out there just, you know, armchair, you know, reviewing it.
Mm-hmm. I remember wanting to read the books, but the only thing that kept me away from the books at the time was that I found out that they were mostly all short stories or like short story compendiums.
Mm.
So I was like, I kind of would rather just like sink my teeth into a book.
Poland.
Oh.
So oh, you were right.
It was really going
to
bug me.
Shout out to all our Polish listeners. I intend to support it regardless, right? I want to see more.
Oh, I'm for sure going to check it out.
More gaming,
dude,
whatever.
I have always believed, I think the best way to tell a video game story in like on a screen, in a non-interactive medium, is a miniseries. It's not a movie. It's not a 30-minute TV show. I think it's best in hour-long chunks, like a Game of Thrones style.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see a Halo miniseries. I'd love to see a Warcraft miniseries. I think, you know, video games are built, they're segmented in a way. You've got levels or dungeons or areas of a map. You know, in different ways, games are always segmented where you see chunks at a time, you know. A movie cannot, in my opinion, do justice to a video game because you can't possibly set the stage in a way that sets up the gravity of the situation without focusing too much on one little part.
How can you say that? Because I heard that the World of Warcraft movie was just so good.
The biggest criticism...
It did really well in China.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. You know, there's a lot to tell, and if you told it in 30-minute chunks, I think it would just be a little too cheesy. You know, the one-hour-long period of a Game of Thrones... The world is big enough where you can shift from different stories and you can tell, oh, I'm in this area and I'm watching these characters now. And you can do that. And that's more like a video game where, you know, there's like the world is happening, but there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, even The Last of Us, like you only follow two characters really, but you're in this city and then you're in this part of the wilderness and then you're over here. And it's all segmented in a way like that is how a miniseries feels. You know, and I think that's the treatment that video games deserve if they're going to get the budget that is going to do justice to them, the actors that are going to show up, and to really not over-dramatize it. When I watch 30-minute shows, well, not that every 30-minute show isn't, you know, doesn't have something to offer, but when I watch something that's 22 minutes long, when you cut out the commercials, I feel like a lot of times it just covers almost just too small. Amount. Like here's the story for this episode, and on the next episode it'll be something different. And that's an overgeneralization, but I like the grandness of an hour long where it hits a bunch of areas or a bunch of different stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not just its own self-contained story.
I think my biggest struggle, or the things, and maybe you could say even the struggle that any stories have had, whether it's a movie or a series or whatever based on video games, is that, you know, the games themselves, generally the most popular ones, do a good job of giving you a lot of story, and they build out this whole universe, right? So how do you tell something that's fresh, right, in that universe, maybe with the same characters? How do you tell another story that gets the gaming audience interested but isn't trying to retell a story and isn't trying to undo some kind of canon?
You look at Castlevania. I've never played the games, and it didn't matter. The show was great. It was only 4 episodes long, and apparently I was talking to somebody over the weekend. They were trying to tell me that the next season is going to be like 8-ish episodes long, which, hell yeah, and they've already been greenlit for season 3. This is all hearsay. I haven't looked this up, but I trust my buddy. That all sounds great to me, because Castlevania, I've heard people talk about the story and this and that and the other, but I like that when I'm watching this show, if you never told me it was based on a video game, I just wouldn't know. because it's a great show. You know, it's not as long as I want it to be, but that's a good problem for them to have.
Yeah. Also, I mean, if you're a player, think about, like, when you're in Skyrim and you're running around a room and there's a bookshelf and you're picking up all these, like, little tidbits and nuggets of lore. How many people actually sit there and read all of this lore?
Oh, no.
You know, like, there's such a, there's a vast, like...
There's tons of hooks.
Yeah.
Right? But it also has to be, whatever it is, if you're putting on Netflix, has to be mainstream enough that you can pull in non-gaming viewers, too. So,
yeah, but I mean, I think you can take that lore, and then if you're putting, like, a visual aspect to it, like, that keeps people's interest so they're not just, like, reading a book in a video game.
To be honest, I mean, I know you guys are saying pulling, making the story so you're not recreating canon or keeping it within the same canon. I'll tell you this. I would love a straight copy-to-copy recreation of Metal Gear Solid series 1 through 3. I mean, those were the best ones, and they were fantastic. I could watch that, the cutscenes, it become a movie or a series. I want it copied per period.
Dude.
To the T.
Okay, well,
it's so good.
I've never played those games. Just today, so on Giant Bomb, there's an old series with a guy that's not even with them anymore. Where one of them, who's actually Dan Reichert, he's a guy from Lawrence, Kansas. He grew up loving Metal Gear Solid. He ended up working for Game Informer and stuff. Now he works at Giant Bomb. I think he worked at GameSpot. I can't remember. But he loved Metal Gear Solid. Well, Drew, this other guy. Never played it. And so they're like, well, let's just do a feature where we just run through the games. You know, you run through it totally fresh, and everyone, somebody like me, I get to see it firsthand. I get to see it for the first time. I don't actually want to go back and play those games. I want to experience them, but I don't really want to play them. So mm-hmm. This gives me a great opportunity not only to see the content, but it's also people playing that I like. And it's an old guy who can tell you about the Easter eggs and, like, oh, hey, now that we've gone through that part, let me tell you about a story that happened years ago that you'd never know unless you were there, you know. So I get to hear, like, the background of stuff that happened, like, around the video game and, you know, the industry and stuff. And I get to hear the surprises of him, you know. They were running through an episode, they're on Metal Gear Solid. Well, I'm on Metal Gear Solid 2 right now. And some stuff happened that the veteran has never seen. And he's played all those games, like, 5 times apiece. And so it's fun to see both of them even be surprised in something like that. So like that, I'm just watching the game. I'm not even watching a movie. But the excitement of being able to have a newbie and a veteran in the room enjoying it, plus the actual thing, that's exciting because it's not just the video game. It's something bonus that we can all – it's something unique that wouldn't exist without the gamers around them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not a solution of how to make a movie or write a show about Metal Gear Solid, but, you know, that's a game that's cinematic enough that if you did make a series, if you did like an HD, you know, full cutscenes,
yeah,
live action or something, you know, if they pulled it off right, that'd be pretty slick.
It'd be a great one. It would.
Are you with the Force?
Is the Force with you?
Well, the Force is with us over at the Echo Station Podcast, a new Star Wars series from the Heroes Podcast Network.
Join us in a galaxy not so far away every other Monday as we discuss everything Star Wars from the original films through the whole EU.
So pour yourself some blue milk and get cozy in that tauntaun with the Echo Station Podcast. Find out more at heroespodcast.com.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, John.
What are you playing?
So I have been playing Axiom Verge. It's a game that I've been keeping an eye on the Nintendo shop for a while. I looked at some of the previews, like the trailer and some of the still images, and I was like, you know, I want to play this game. I just don't know if I want to pay $20 for it yet. So it just went on sale to $10. I saw over the weekend, so immediately picked it up. It's a very much like Super Metroid clone. So I knew I was going to like it no matter what. But it does really hook me. Not just the fact that it's a Super Metroid clone, but the storytelling, the dialogue is pretty rocky at parts. But as far as how the actual like world building goes, they've really built a really interesting universe. So this game kind of starts where there's like a scientist in a laboratory and they're doing some kind of experiment. Something terrible happens. There's a big explosion and he wakes up on, at the time you don't really know what it is, but he wakes up on another world. And there's this person talking to him, but he doesn't really know who it is. He doesn't know why he's there. He doesn't know what's going on. All he knows is that he's in, like, his white t-shirt, his pants, and he has this gun. So they're kind of like, the thing talking to him clearly is, like, kind of dying. So it doesn't have a lot of information to give before it kind of peters out and can't talk to him anymore. So he's kind of left to just run around levels trying to figure out what's going on. And then as you beat bosses and pick up new gear and stuff, it starts to open up a little bit more. And you start to run into these rooms where there are these, like, giant humanoid mechanical heads, like, kind of hanging off the wall. And this is, like, the creature that's communicating with you. And apparently something has taken over this planet that's, I don't know if it's like a virus or what's going on, but something is kind of destroying them internally. So you're kind of expected to help them save themselves. And even throughout, like I said, sometimes the dialogue's rocky. Like there's one point where you are sitting there and you start thinking, like, why am I helping these things? Like, they're the only things not trying to kill me, so I guess it's probably in my best interest to help them. But at the same time, you're still kind of just wondering, like, what's my motivation? And then your character just says, well, I don't know why I'm helping you, but I guess I will. And you're like, okay, whatever.
Just gonna shoehorn that one in.
Yeah. So I know that's not like a great great review of the product, but there are other things that really kind of make the game interesting. Like when you're playing, the first time you die, your guy falls on the ground, everything goes black, and then you get taken back to the save room where there's almost like this like egg or like this pod that opens up, and then you're back in the pod. Most games, you know, you would just start playing again, but then he stops and he says, what just happened? And then that voice comes back and it says, you died. And then he goes, am I still the same person? Dot, dot, dot. And then you're like, oh, man, that is pretty crazy. Because, like, he doesn't know. And now he's worried about that. I just feel like that's something that's like an existential crisis that I don't feel like most games go into when you die.
I respond, but, like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. So, but I mean, but it's also kind of interesting because at the beginning of the game, you start to think, like, well, am I just in a computer simulation? Like, am I actually on a world? But then later on, you find out that you're actually on an alien planet. So now everything's confusing. But the thing that's fun about the game is that I think a lot of games, kind of like what last episode we talked a little bit, like very shortly about Hollow Knight. Mm-hmm. And so there's obviously a lot of different like Metroid, Castlevania type games. But I almost feel like this game is like Super Metroid meets Mega Man. Because you get
Samus already sort of like Mega Man?
Well, okay, yeah, with the gun arm. Okay. But what I mean is like in Metroid, when you're upgrading your weapon, that you still just use that weapon. In Mega Man, they give you 10 plus different weapon types.
Each one for its own boss.
Yeah, basically. And each one works in certain scenarios. So this game is more like that. You get a bunch of upgrades for your weapons. And I remember the first upgrade I got for the weapon, I just exclusively used that because I'm like, oh yeah, this is definitely just better than my other weapon. Until I came across a boss where I'm like, man, this thing just is not firing fast enough. It was one of those kinds of guns where you like fire the bullet and it slowly goes across the screen, and when you hit the button again it explodes. So I'm fighting this guy where I'm trying to have really quick precise shots, and this weapon just is not working out for me. So I go back to the original weapon and then it's much easier to kill the boss. So it really kind of helps you to switch through the different weapon types depending on the boss that you're fighting. The other thing that really drew me to it was just the art style and the music. So it's very much a retro, like 8-bitty kind of looking game, but it almost feels like you're playing in like the Aliens universe. Like the settings and the monsters, everything is very like biomechanical. So you've like all of your monsters are like these pounds of flesh that maybe have like a gun inserted directly into the body or something. But the settings even feel like H.R. Giger was the artist that designed the Alien and the Aliens franchise. And if you go back and look at his art, I've thought about trying to find some of his art to put up in my house, but all of it is so just gothic and like depressing. I just don't know if there's anywhere I could actually hang it and it fit with anything else.
You got to devote a room to it.
Yeah.
It's your little H.R. Giger, like, chapel.
Yeah, and you really could, because he also designed some furniture, but it's all like it's like chairs where there's like rib cages going up
this
the
is
chairs.
So uncomfortable.
This is the room where Mike has his sacrifices. Right?
It's yeah. like the room. It's like the big chair that the pilot's in Prometheus.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
And it's that's, like that's one of the DLC electric chairs in Prison Tycoon or whatever. Prison Tycoon. It's a real thing that I saw on the shelf one time. It was like Prison Tycoon 3, so there were three of them, at least.
Well, the second is the classic. I mean, everybody knows.
It's hard to repeat the success of Prison Tycoon 2. Yeah.
Well, after the electric chair, they show like one person with their hair up talking about how shitty your ride was.
Oh. I went off Mr. Bone's wild ride.
So anyway, but yeah, it's like, it's that kind of art where it's like, first of all, this is too gothic and I don't know if I have any rooms that this would fit in. And then if it doesn't fall in that category, then it's just too awkwardly sexual and I don't have the balls to put it up in my house.
Dude, H.R. Giger did that on purpose. I listened to a whole...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I listened to a bunch of stuff on him on why he made the aliens the way he did. And the reason he did that, where you've got like, you know, they've got the little alien that like sticks out of their mouth, right? And it'll poke you. But you've got like the face huggers, so they latch on your face and they like stick a thing down your throat and plant an egg, right? That's disgusting.
Ovipositor.
Yeah. So the point of him doing that specifically was because it was a more effective tactic of creeping out men, because the idea of like penetration straight up is much more uncomfortable to men than, like, that's not something we experience in any positive way at all. And he intentionally...
Well, I guess it depends.
you're right.
Depends who you are.
That's fair. But he very specifically designed it like that so that it was naturally uncomfortable, like, in a physical way.
Yeah. That definitely comes out in his art. There's a lot of like just phallic like symbolism in his art.
And that's
art.
Why they're long and tubular. Yeah. It really is.
Chest bursters are like giving birth, and that's uncomfortable for men too. Yeah.
It's like pushing a bowling ball out of my chest.
It's called indigestion.
I have the worst heartburn.
But yeah, so like the game kind of has that art style and that art feel, and it's just cool. The music is awesome. Now, When I got this game, it was after my wife and I had spent some time drinking and playing Mario Kart, so I was a little two sheets to the wind. I was already texting John about how epic the soundtrack was, and then like when I went back and like re-listened to the soundtrack, there are some songs that kind of, it seems like they use the same kind of sampling from other songs, but there's enough like there are enough unique songs on the soundtrack for this $10, $20 game that, you know, they put a lot of work into it. And it's almost like some of the songs I was telling John earlier that I honestly feel like I could put into my like electronic playlist, because it's kind of just a retro-y kind of electronic feel to the music.
Yeah, I have that the main theme on several of my games.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And there are times, though, my complaint about it is just that sometimes it gets a little tedious, because some of those boss battles just take forever. And maybe it's just because I'm not good enough yet to get to a point to where I've really memorized all of the different attack sequences or whatever. But, I mean, some of those battles took me a long time, and I was just listening to that same song over and over again, where it was like, wow, this is really cool, like when I started fighting this guy. Yeah. But, yeah, overall, I would say don't spend $20 on it. I didn't think it would be a $20 game, and I still don't think it's a $20 game, but I definitely am glad that I paid $10 for it, because I definitely think that it's at least a $10 game. And it definitely has enough added to it to where, even though it really is a Super Metroid clone, there's enough new stuff to it that it really keeps you interested and it's fun to play.
Hmm. Awesome.
It's really just the thing that I'm playing while I wait for Dead Cells to drop in price a little bit.
Oh, come on.
I want to play it really
bad. It is worth the $25.
Yeah.
I played it all Labor Day weekend. And I'm about to beat it, or I should say beat it on my first run through, I guess. Because, you know, they have some replayability and running through multiple times. But it gets really hard when you approach the final boss. Like, I actually feel like I'm pretty decent at the game now, and I still haven't even made it to the final boss. I'm like one level away.
Dude, I've put at least 50 hours in Spelunky, and I've never beaten the game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're discouraging me.
Well, because I could talk all day about how, like, you know, it's like Darkest Dungeon. It's the appeal of that game is the grind, not the,
mm-hmm.
not the, you know, destination. Where I've just played that over and over and over, and I constantly see new things, because it's randomly generated, you know, mm-hmm. it's a roguelike. But I thoroughly enjoy that game. I'm excited for the second one that just got its trailer announced. But yeah, I mean, those are games that, I mean, I'd pay at least $25 for Spelunky. When mm-hmm. it first came out, I wouldn't have bought that out of the gates. But for as much as I enjoyed it, I easily would have paid $25.
I saw you'd posted on Facebook or something, the trailer for Spelunky 2. And I saw some gameplay. It looks like something I'll try, especially after loving Dead Cells so much.
It more or less looks like just a prettier version of the first game with some mm-hmm. cool new mechanics. Like, it looks like there's almost... Who was I talking to about it? It's like a Yoshi mechanic where... You definitely couldn't ride anything before,
mm-hmm.
but it looked like the sort of thing where you can, like, you know, Yoshi sacrifice this, like, creature that you could ride. But it looks like they're new mechanics. The thing I'm really excited for about that, though, is online co-op. The first game had couch co-op, but it was really weird because your field of view is pretty small, and it only follows the first player. I tried it out with Lizzie, like, one whole time, and... If I fell down a cliff, well, now you can't see her anymore, and
so
technically she can still maneuver outside of the screen, but probably she's going to die.
That doesn't sound great.
No, it was not great. So it seems like everyone should get their own screen. I don't know how that would work still, just the way that the game works. But I'm excited about it because I really enjoy the first game, and the ability to properly play some sort of co-op on there sounds very fun. I just really like co-op on procedurally generated stuff. Because you're both discovering stuff.
Yeah. all right, Josh.
All right.
I'm going to give you five minutes.
There's too much to talk about.
World of Warcraft.
All right, listeners.
5 minutes, that feels like 25
I know minutes. You're out there. There's other WoW players like me listening right now. I mean, I think it's like 1 in every 10 people have played WoW. So come on here.
1 in every 10?
The world?
This is real stats and real reporting.
It's like an STD.
Never. It's a crack addiction. All right. So we won't go too much into what is WoW. We've had 14 years to figure it out. All right. It is.
No, wait. Start from the beginning.
Oh, God.
So right. Orcs showed up.
So today was a big day for the new expansion, BFA. They launched their kind of the biggest first patch, your Mythic Plus dungeons, your new PvP content, and your raid, right? Raids, getting new items. Well, that's pretty cyclical.
Raids are just now out.
Just now out, right? So World of Warcraft is pretty cyclical. You got your raids at release and then new raids after that. Kind of tiers your way up to get to the best gear. Well, what they've also, if you've been keeping up with WoW, they do Mythic Dungeons. Which is your hardest type of dungeon, and then they called Mythic Pluses. So you do a Mythic Dungeon +1. It's the lowest, but you can go all the way up, +16. The dungeons get very difficult. But as you finish those Mythic Plus dungeons, every week you can return to your... On Tuesdays, you'll be rewarded for how high you cleared that dungeon. So if you got to Mythic +15, you're going to get a Mythic +15 item level. So that's what they've been doing over the past few expansions with their Mythic Dungeons. Well, when they released the content today, people were getting rewarded for Mythic Dungeons that they were doing at the end of the last expansion. So if in the last week of Legion you cleared a Mythic +15 dungeon, you got that equivalent in a BFA item. People started getting really high level item level
without
drops
doing
without doing anything because they did something in the last week of the previous expansion. So people are getting overpowered in a game of integrity. Like, a lot of guilds like to be the first. So when you start having players having item level 400 stuff already, people are getting mad. They're getting so mad, and this has been done in the past, that they want server resets done. Now, on today, they want to roll back and start fresh, remove those items. Oh, yeah. I think you have to.
That's going
to
happen.
Yeah. Wait, why don't they just... So they're just today getting the beefy items,
Yes, today. It's already been squashed. So they already squashed the bug. The bug is done. You cannot receive those items anymore. But people already have them.
They can remove the items.
I don't know the technology behind the architecture, right? How do they do it? People want server resets. I mean, that's what they're calling. Reddit's a big place for people to vent. So a lot of Redditors are going out there saying, demanding server resets.
I wouldn't be very happy if you know.
Especially in a guild, if you're trying to first, a lot of guilds are method, you know, the big ones. They're upset. They want to be the first to run these raids and mythic pluses, and now there's other members that have gear scores hot twice their size, twice their item level. So, yeah, I think your server reset's warranted here. Now, that's like the most extreme, but it's a bug, and they messed up.
Well, right,
they can just back out the items.
Yeah, because a server reset...
You would think they could just remove their items, but what if that person sold the item to replace that? A reset would kind of negate that. You'd still start with that item you had before you got the beefier one.
I don't know, man. If I didn't raid and I lost a day's worth of progress, I would be equally angry.
Yeah, very true. Even if that were a possibility, a server reset at any point, the longer you go from it, the less likely it is to happen. Because people lose their stuff.
Right. That's what's going on. We're already almost, we're going to be hitting 24 hours tomorrow. If they don't make an announcement saying it's going to happen, it's not going to happen.
I don't think they will. I mean, I definitely get the player frustration there. And if I were in their position, I'd probably be like, okay. You know, I'd be frustrated too.
Everyone should get one Uber item.
That's what I said. Yeah, just level the playing field. But I swear, in instances of bugs causing dupes or item problems before, they had just corrected the individual items. Like, way back in the day. They had the ability to just pull items.
I think they should be able to. I think it should be very simple to... Because I believe the items, though, that were they were receiving, they're real items that they would have gotten later for doing the Mythic Pluses. So it's kind of like you just got them ahead of time.
You know,
right?
maybe they do like, you know, you get an achievement for completing a raid, right?
Right.
Especially if you do like Mythic or stuff. Maybe like with specifically those items that were improperly unlocked, they do like a soft lock where if you don't have the achievement, if your character doesn't have that achievement, then you can't equip the item or something like that. Because... That wouldn't have to touch.
That's interesting. Everybody.
If they take their items away, they could just like give them a pet that says, "I got screwed by Blizzard."
But then you
like
have
a little badge.
Then you have a unique pet, and that's actually the thing I'd be mad about.
But if I got screwed by a bug, because it's not the player's fault who got the items either, right?
Yeah, some of these players probably didn't even know. Yeah. Like, right? They just walked up into their area and they opened their chest and they're like, "Holy crap! I got this item. I didn't do anything."
Yeah. I'm rich. Yeah. I played that dungeon really well. I deserve it.
But yeah, this is it. Bugs can really hurt a game. Yeah. And this was a big one. And Blizzard needs an answer. We demand an answer.
You hear that, Blizzard? Gamer Heroes podcast demands an answer.
Yeah.
You have 24 hours.
I heard Josh promise he would stop playing. Wow. If you didn't fix this problem.
That's $14.99 a month you're losing. I actually don't even pay that. I just sell fish and buy WoW coins.
Don't be hasty, young hobbit. Did you guys ever hear about the glitch? I'm sure you have. In vanilla WoW. In Zul'Garub, the first 10-man raid, the first raid ever, the final boss had this blood plague he would cast on you.
Oh, yeah.
And it does damage to you every, you know, however many seconds, but it has a 25% chance to spread to anybody around you, and it'll mess them up. Well, it's a max level dungeon. So the glitch was that somebody got this and then teleported to a capital city from the raid, took the debuff with them, and cities were just
so plagued. It was actually the pets. They didn't properly manage it. So when you left, your pets would also leave when you were done with the dungeon.
So like if I was a warlock,
pets carried it out.
And, yeah, and my cat carried the plague, but then I dismissed them. You know, and then like they don't die. So then when you go back to to town and then summon your pet again, they've got the plague again, so it'll spread
out. Started wiping out cities.
And so
true bubonic plague.
People couldn't go into the cities because if even if you were max level, probably you're going to die. But if you weren't max level, you couldn't do anything. So you'd walk into Orgrimmar and they're just skeletons.
It was the greatest bug ever in video game history. I mean, it wiped out thousands of people.
I played all through Vanilla WoW and I don't even remember that. Maybe my server people just didn't figure it out.
Well, it didn't happen everywhere, and that was actually before I started playing, because I wasn't there when, you know, that was the only raid that existed. But I wrote a paper about that way back in high school, actually. Epidemiologists who study diseases used that data from World of Warcraft to, basically to anticipate, to some extent, to anticipate what people would do in, like, a disease, like an outbreak epidemic, where you had basically three types of people, three groups of people. You had healers, you know, you had people who were just trying to help everybody in the game. You were literally healing them, so refilling their health bar. But that could also mean like going into chat and being like, everyone stay out of the city, like, you know, going to the newbie players who are just playing for the first time and they're walking up to their first big city. And people just being like, turn back. Orgrimmar's
quarantined everyone. Stay out.
It was. But then it would spread to all the, I mean, even the little towns. Like, somebody would show up and they, you know. So you had the healers. You had the victims. You had the people that were too low level. They were helpless. Or you had the high levels who just couldn't take it. I mean, they wandered into town and then, you know, you respawn and die. But then you still can't get far enough and you respawn and die. And the whole time you're taking damage on your equipment. So it's costing you in-game money to do this. So it's not just like terrible and time consuming. No, like, it actually
costing the players time.
But the third group of people are the people who spread it on purpose. They're the people who take their pet and intentionally they're like, oh, okay, it's safe, guys, come back.
The bioterrorists. Yeah.
Yeah. And they really had to account for that, because the idea is like, if, you know, it's just a game, but in real life, if people thought it was the end of the world, you'd probably have those three people. You'd have helpless people, you'd have healers, you'd have helpers, you know, and organizers and survivors. And you'd have the people who are just like, you know, they'd be the equivalent of the Raiders.
If I'm going down, everyone else is going
right.
down.
Right, it's the end of the world anyway. What does it matter?
I want this to turn into another game called The Division, World of Warcraft.
I love The Division, but all right, that's another story.
All right, guys, should we do some mailbag?
Let's do it.
Mail time.
You've got mail.
All right. So this kind of wrap-up segment of our podcast each week is where we ask a question to our listeners, and we want you to reach out to us via social media to give us your best answers. And the best answers will be selected and read by us or discussed by us here on the show.
And so are the worst answers.
And the worst. And the really, worst. Really the answers that have the most impact on me personally.
Does it make me smile or does it make me frown?
Cringe. All right. So last week's question was, what Pokemon do you want to be and why? We had some good answers for this. I think that I don't want to say pedantic, but probably the most accurate answer was Abdul, who said Ditto, so that he can be any Pokemon. But I don't know if that's exactly the spirit of the question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is. There are no wrong answers, because he did exactly what we asked.
Well, and so immediately after that, let's see, it was Tommy Gay said, I want to be Mew, because why be Ditto? Ditto was the failed clone of Mew.
Oh.
So
is that true?
Ditto was?
Yeah, I guess. I seem to recall that from the game.
I thought he was talking about Mewtwo, because isn't Mewtwo the...
Yeah, Mew is actually a
Mewtwo
real
was
Pokemon.
The real clone.
Yeah,
Mewtwo Ditto was a clone.
Right, Ditto, but was, Ditto was a failed clone. Yeah, yeah. My brothers told me all about it. Yeah.
Deep in the Pokemon lore.
He does. Dude, he is so into that.
I thought he was just like Pokemon Play-Doh.
Dude, I picked the one I chose. I would be Lantern. It was in Gen 2. It's water and electric. It's basically...
Is that one of the starters?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
It's like the equivalent of Tentacool.
Okay.
Except like actually cool.
Yeah. You know?
Tentacool was cool. Deep
cut. Tentacruel was aight.
Yeah.
You go into like later in the game and you go fishing and you find it. The first, it evolves twice, or it evolves once rather. The first one, Chinchoa, looks pretty stupid. it's pretty bad, but it's got great attacks. And then the second one, it turns into almost this goofy, cartoony whale thing. But it's somewhere between like a little seal and like an angler fish because it's got, you know, it's called lantern because it's got the angler light. But man, I'd pick that because like I really don't like water I can't see to the bottom of. Do not like.
Oh, thalassophobia or whatever?
Ugh, man, I'm not trying to go in deep ocean water.
So you'd rather have just like a light dangle in front of your eyes for the rest of your life?
No, no. The thing is, if I was going to
can't go, be dark if I only see light.
I could go into space. I ain't worried about that. Like, I could be alone in the wilderness for a long time. The only place that really freaks me out is deep ocean. But if I was going to live, like, if I wanted to go in the place that I fear, mm-hmm. I'd have a light. Man, I could zap anything. The idea of being a fish that gotcha. Can, like, electrocute things. If I'm going to be able to live
wouldn't you electrocute
the
yourself?
One place, in the one place I couldn't go, I want to be, like, alpha in that place. Yeah. So,
do electric eels electricate themselves?
I don't know.
Oh, nice.
I have no idea. I'm asking.
Well, you heard it here first. If you want to conquer your fears, become a Pokemon.
I think I would want to be Magikarp just so that I could, like, experience the utter joy of evolving into Gyarados.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, oh my god, I don't have to be this Pokemon anymore.
Do you think that, like, it's always kind of weird when I think about Pokemon evolving. Like, in that world, do you watch them, like, their bodies contort and, like, become this thing? I've always thought that, like, for Magikarp to Gyarados, there was, like, this big fish. Like, Magikarp opens its mouth wider and wider.
And it does, like, an alien thing where Gyarados
just
out.
Comes out of the mouth and he just, like, molts Magikarp off of it. Gross, right?
That's nasty.
Yeah, like wondering like how long it takes them to get used to their new body parts. Like, do you think the Magikarp, like the Gyarados, is just flapping around on the ground while it's like accidentally shooting Dragon Beam everywhere?
Yep.
Man, whoever sends an artwork of an H.R. Giger Gyarados, I will pay you.
And the dark parts of the internet, I swear, there's like a realistic artist who drew renditions if the Pokemon are actually looking realistic, and Venusaur looks creepy
yep.
as heck.
I remember that. That was good stuff. We had a few other good ones. Hunter said that he wants to be Machamp so that he has extra arms to pet animals with.
Yeah, that's very valid.
Machamp does seem like a very utilitarian Pokemon. Could do a lot of things, like be a good servant. This is going to stray quickly into the conversation of whether Pokemon are slaves or not.
I mean, they're building houses. Laying bricks?
And then probably the last one, which I should have anticipated but did not, was Missing Number. Is it really a Pokemon?
I don't know.
Yes.
It's
a problem child. That's what it is.
It corrupts your save files.
Yep. You definitely did that for me.
So thank you to everybody who submitted your responses. We really enjoyed those. We do have a question for next week. The way you answer is this will be posted on all of our social media channels. So the GGKC Facebook, the GGKC Twitter, which is at GG_Kansas_City. And then also the Heroes Podcast Network Facebook page. So please hit us up if you think you've got a great answer to contribute. You can also hit us up at gg-kc.com. This week's question is, what game would you like to see as a Netflix series in the spirit of our conversation earlier?
I told you, anybody? Metal Gear Solid. Still
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, well, I'll save my input because I got a lot of shows that I, new and old, I'd like to see. Turned into something special.
Get that
real treatment.
I would love if they did something with Portal.
Well, that'd be good,
right?
That would be good.
It sort of like a make it sort of like a psychological thing.
No, like the hardcore Henry
test subject.
Portal, like hardcore Henry. You guys see that first person movie?
Okay, I have no problem with shaky cam, but that sounds like a headache.
With the portal and the way it was.
Oh my gosh, if you didn't know which way was down.
Yeah.
Oh, especially, imagine if you watched it in VR. Like, if you watched, oh man, I think that'd just be too much. But that'd be so cool.
I mean,
cool.
I watched, it would be cool. I watched Blair Witch and I sat through that. Hardcore Henry was a lot, ages better than Blair Witch.
Oh my gosh.
It's a first person, you know.
Well, I'm not trying to rip on the shaky cam stuff because I love the first Cloverfield movie.
Oh yeah?
And I think there's very fair criticism to be made about shaky cam.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
That is...
Hurts your head.
That's a lot of shake.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, if you want to say Leisure Suit Larry, throw it out there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that one. That I feel like that would just be like, what's the guy on Family Guy, the giggity giggity guy?
Quagmire.
Oh, I feel like that would just be Quagmire.
Actually, that's basically just Quagmire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Animated series of Conker's Bad Fur Day. That would be
funny.
That'd be hilarious.
Duke Nukem. I would watch the hell out of a Duke Nukem
series.
Shake
it, baby.
You know what I forgot already exists is the Ratchet and Clank movie that side-by-sided the remake that happened recently.
That was a thing?
Yeah.
I got the new Ratchet and Clank, and it came with a copy of the,
yeah.
of the movie.
And it's funny because I haven't watched the movie, but the game, it's told from the point of view of Captain Quark, who's in a bunch of the games. The games, it's funny because like they're kind of remakes of each other, but not really, but sort of. And it's ambiguous on purpose, and they know it, and they make jokes about it and stuff. And so the impression I've gotten is that, like, the movie is, you know, this story, right? And it seems like the game is Captain Quark's retelling of the movie, and then you play through that. So the impression I get is that stuff isn't actually true to the movie, but it's his goofy interpretation of, like, of how he's really the hero. And just all this goofy stuff happens. But it's clever storytelling, but the fact that it is tied with that movie is pretty unique. You know, not to say that the movie's good or bad either way. I have not seen it, but.
Well, we are going to, we're going to quit while we're ahead. We don't want to take all of the good answers, but if you have something you want to contribute, hit us up on social media. And also feel free to send us any questions that you think would generate some funny responses. We'd love to have those. We have a list of questions we're going to use going forward, but we'd love to add to them. Thanks for listening, and you know we'll see you next week. Again, hit us up on our website, gg-kc.com, if you want to reach out to us.
Thanks.
All right, sayonara.
Bye.